Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
Okay, so we're going to get straight into the Constitution because it is Constitution Month, because that's how much time it'll probably take just to go through this. And I say this because the editorializing obviously is adding to this, but some of the details of what these things mean, it gets lost unless you've read the ratification debates where they've kind of talked about that. So this is my best attempt in trying to actually provide all of the clarity necessary. As a matter of fact, when we get to the 14th Amendment, history and everything else is everything. This is why, if you want to read exactly what was going on in Congress at this time, because the sovereign citizen movement really, really clings on to this idea that it was the 14th Amendment that created the corporations and, you know, all of these unconstitutional government corporations and so forth, and changed the definition of citizens and all of that. It did not. And I challenge anybody to read these these debates in Congress to find the evidence that that even happened during that time frame. And as a matter of fact, you will not find it. I don't believe you'll find these things within the congressional globe. So what does that mean? What that means is that this is something that happened, one, after the 14th Amendment, this deviation to our government, this unconstitutional deviation to our government, occurred well after the 14th Amendment, and a few years. It was in the 1870s, and it was not done constitutionally. It was not done within the context of an amendment, nor did the states allow, or anywhere in the Constitution did they have the enumerated powers to do this. So anyway, as we move forward, let me just get through these obligatories, and then we will dive back into the First Amendment so we can get into the Second Amendment and so forth. Now, as you know, the show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org as well as Mobius Strip Press. You are listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. Timber Nation, check out TimberNation.com if you're looking for some furnishings, solid hardwood furnishings, radio dust covers to protect your electronics equipment that you've paid good money for, and you don't want dust to over time as it gets exposed and covered and layered in dust, it will cause your systems and or your electronics to fail. We want you to check out AdLocal if you need ISP support, and we have Red Pill Expo coming up, and we hope to get as many legislators engaged and there. It seems like what we're facing right now with what's going on from the Biden administration and all of these major unconstitutional plays that they're doing, it seems like the legislators are getting busier and busier. So and a lot of them aren't even in session. Most legislators aren't even in session. So don't let them get out of attending. What we need to do is make sure that they understand that this is where they need to be if they want to understand what they need to do in combating and in pushing back against this unconstitutional federal government. We've got the comment line, 425-270-5416. And with that, we're just going to dive straight into the First Amendment. Now, we've already covered two parts of this, the freedom of the press and the establishment of religion. No state has that applied to them, because if you understand the 14th Amendment, which we went into in our previous episode, the 14th Amendment makes it so that it is protecting the citizens. It says, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. So it doesn't mean that it can't So what it means is that we can't pass laws, states can't pass laws, local governments cannot pass laws that abridge your individual privileges and immunities, but states can still have an established church because that's not abridging your privileges and or immunities, nor can they pass laws to take away your religious expression, those types of things. But they can utilize and create an established church to utilize that for education purposes and other things. As long as you have the freedom of your religious expression, they're okay. And it's the same thing with the freedom of the press. They can regulate the press. They can put standards on the press. The press itself being the platform, not the reporter. If you understand the reporter being the press, okay, yes. But when you have platforms that are actually... and that is where they can really regulate the platform or where the press is being filtered through and provided to the public in a newspaper, TV, or what have you. They can actually go after the platform, that medium of what is presenting or the mechanism that gets that news to you. They can regulate that because the 14th Amendment, again, only applies to the privileges and immunities of U.S. citizens, not organizations or institutions like platforms. Okay, so here we go with the final part. And this is probably, you know, one of the most important parts. The right of the people to peaceably assemble, or peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, let me go back to the beginning of this sentence of, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of. So if we just did a dot, 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 it would be, or abridging the right of the people to peaceably assemble or peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. That abridging means that they can't do anything. They can't create any laws that constrain you from doing any of these things. What we have seen is that we've seen the government actually abridging your right to petition them. When they put fence around Congress, they basically kept you from being able to go in and exercise your First Amendment right of petitioning them in person. Oh, well, they were too scared. They have reasons. I'm sorry. I am sorry. They cannot protect themselves from the people. They cannot. It is clearly here. Congress shall make no law abridging the right to petition government for a redress of grievances. If you do all the dot dots to connect this, that's how it would read. And so they can't make any laws that keep you from being able to physically get there. They can't make any laws to tell you the format. They can't make any laws to tell you how many signatures you have to require. It can be just one person taking the stand against Congress and saying, you can't do this. Now, we have some history that was written by Bob Scholz, and this is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org on the petitions page. It's at the very bottom. This is a six-page history of the First Amendment right of petition. What Bob is giving you the history of is what are the consequences if they do not comply to the First Amendment right of petition. In other words, if they don't address and fix your grievances in a reasonable amount of time, and I think it started off with the Magna Carta, they have 40 days. And after that, you were able to take, and actually today in context to the Constitution, you are no longer obligated to have to pay your taxes to an oppressive government that is non-responsive to you. And so Bob Scholz, this is in essence what he is doing. And what I should do is I should put the link to his lawsuit, which is the argument of his lawsuit that is going in front of the Supreme Court, that's been in front of the Supreme Court. And actually, I think what I'll do is I will give you an update within the next week or so on where that, what happened with that, where that's going. Because the fundamental argument is that, you know, we have this right and there are consequences to this right when the government doesn't behave properly. And it is to give the people relief from a government that is non-responsive. And that relief is taxes. And so this is what is being argued with the Supreme Court. And I think you'll find it very fascinating. And I believe that when we look at all of the different things that you can petition for, I bet you these First Amendment petitions and removing governors that we have on our petitions page that we're actually pursuing, I'll bet you we'll get a lot of people if they actually get, you know, the hint, or if they understand that they will be eligible to actually fight for and no longer have to pay taxes until government fixes these problems. So let's move on to the Second Amendment. I don't want to belabor this because I think I've gone through this part of the First Amendment a few times. The Second Amendment, or the fourth article of the Bill of Rights, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Now, that's a kind of like a precursor, but this is in context to Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15. And let me go to that. It's right here. And it says... Well, we'll have to cover this when we come back, because I want to marry this and stitch this together for you, because understanding what the militia is and how it is a part of our security, we'll put this into context. And we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, now, so let's remember the word regulated. Regulated in their context, in under their definition, back in the 1790s, 1780s, a well-regulated, to regulate commerce, a well-regulated militia, and so forth. Just so you understand, that was to put in good order. The definition of that was to put in good order, not to create laws and to create governing or governors or restrictions and those types of things. And so We got to start off with Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15. And this is what Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 15 states, that Congress shall have the power to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Okay, so understanding that the standing army of the government, when the government has its own ability to enforce its own laws, it will know no limits to its tyranny. But the reason why the framers created this delegation of responsibility back to the citizenry in a militia configuration was to ensure that the federal government could not create its own enforcement agencies, that we, the people, had to enforce our own Constitution, therefore placing a check upon the government in ensuring that it cannot be tyrannical and overcome us and rule us with an iron fist. So in placing this into context with the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia, in other words, a militia that is well-organized and put in good order to function within the state to ensure that there is no necessity for any outside agency to come in to execute the laws of the Union or to do anything regarding enforcement of law out from the federal government, being necessary to the security of a free state. Because once the federal government creates its police agencies and enforcement agencies and these all of this unconstitutional laws and governments, such as the FBI, such as the Department of Justice, forestry, agriculture, all of these things, this is where we see tyranny. This is where we see oppression. And so they were literally coming right out. Madison was coming right out and saying, hey, you know, the fact that, you know, the militia is a huge part of our security, and it is the only legitimate enforcement agency of the federal laws, that a well-regulated militia is being necessary to the security of a free state, because that is how a state will maintain its independence and sovereignty. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And just to understand, when they created this militia, there were two sides to this. There was the organized and the unorganized, that all people were to be prepared to serve and capable of having their own guns and then serving whenever called up. So this is one of the reasons why down the road, and what didn't take long after this, you know, the end of the second part of the Revolutionary War, which was under Madison, and as we started going down this path of peace and prosperity, because we didn't have any external entities that were really trying to be belligerent anymore, we actually started getting respect from England and other nations. We were kind of left alone. And during that time frame is when the federal government started recognizing they had to get rid of the militia, or I should say the evil players, the nefarious people within the federal government said, you know what, that's going to be a problem. And that was one of the reasons why when Lincoln wanted to go down this path of trying to fight a war he couldn't win and fight a war that he would have to violate the Constitution because the militia was ill-prepared. They couldn't do it. And so anyway, this is one of the reasons why this even starts off with the militia, to make sure that there's this connection, that we have this obligation, all of us, as members of the militia in the unorganized sense or the organized sense, that we have this responsibility to ensure that the state sovereignty is being protected, that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, the next amendment, the Third Amendment, no soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. So in other words, they just can't come and say, we're going to stay in your house. We're going to, commandeer this house. They actually have to create, Congress has to create a law as they deploy the militia to actually state that we have to manage quartering in this particular way. Because sometimes, and they've learned this with the Redcoats and the British Army, that they literally took the houses that they wanted and they kicked out the inhabitants and took everything out of that, the supplies and everything else. And this is how they robbed us in, our ability to fight them. And so what they wanted to do, and this right here, this Third Amendment is an absolute amendment in protecting your property. Because even in the time of war, they just can't come along and do it. It has to be prescribed by law as a lawful process. Excuse me. The Fourth Amendment, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. Now, this has been This has been violated all the time now. And if we look at what happened with the dossier, if we look at what happened with these FISA courts and how they actually started wiretapping and surveying Trump and those who were working for him in 2016, they stepped all over this. They have torn up your right of privacy, and we've applied this. They've actually taken this, that you have the security in your person's papers and effects against unreasonable searches, seizures, and they've kind of added to this surveillance as well. Well, the surveillance state has now started violating, because now they're actually able to pull everything in. And they actually are sitting, these intelligence agencies like NSA, is with a vacuum. They're pulling up every phone call, every communication, and they're storing it. That way, if they have to start searching, they have these supercomputers that are capable of just ripping through all of this data, finding any type of instance where you were having a conversation, because the metadata provides them that information. And so as you start, understanding what they can do with this system, and why they're able to keep this data is beyond me. The fact that they're collecting it and able to store it because there may be a bad player. Well, in every essence, this violates posse comitatus. The government should not be collecting information. It is one thing if there are non-U.S. citizens that they are collecting, and only them. But the fact is that they just can't pull everybody in. And we've heard Rand Paul, and others talk about, how this is a huge breach of the Constitution. Even Snowden had made this point. The problem with Snowden is that what he did was he divulged way too much information. And I don't want to go down that path today, but Snowden is not a hero. Snowden is a tyrant and a treasonous, well, fill in the blank. He definitely committed treason, and he should have his day in court so that he can be tried. And I've already talked about how to create an intel oversight, but this is where the states have a bigger responsibility than they even acknowledge. They have no idea, what they have to be doing, but they need to start taking the initiative and being more valiant in protecting our property rights and our lives. They have these responsibilities of stepping in and keeping the federal government within the boundaries of the Constitution. As Madison pointed out, they're obligated and duty-bound to arrest these evils. But anyway, the Fifth Amendment. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb. That's a double jeopardy. Or shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So the due process of law is applied right here. And the fact is, when you look at the 14th Amendment and how they inserted the due process, to me, that was duplicative because they didn't... With the privileges and immunities, that means you are entitled to due process. Why did they have to add that twice? Because what happened is more people think it's about due process. The 14th Amendment is about due process when actually it's applying the privileges and immunities of U.S. citizens. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so if you start looking at the Fifth Amendment, you go, well, the Bill of Rights, just keep in mind that these amendments were protecting people from the federal government. At this point in time, these really didn't apply to the states. But to be clear, these were just protections so that if you committed a crime that the federal government, such as treason or something like that, or you committed a crime on the high seas or against laws of nations, then they had jurisdiction to try you. And so just keep in mind that all of this had everything to do with the federal government. The states... This didn't apply to the states until the 14th Amendment. So the states had all sorts of power over you and could, you know, these types of protections did not apply. They could continue to try you and try you and try you until they got the guilty verdict. The double jeopardy did not stand in many of the states until the 14th Amendment. So the point is that, you know, the necessity of having the Bill of Rights, because you hear people argue against the 14th Amendment applying the Bill of Rights to the states, and you go, well, why wouldn't you want to be protected in your own state from your state government from these types of things? I mean, it's like a no-brainer, right? It keeps the state from being able to take away your arms and by no longer regulating a militia, by no longer allowing a militia and saying, we don't need guns. We now have this different thing called a National Guard, and we trust them to have guns and only them. No. The Constitution's clear. It's to be a militia, and it means it's a citizenry. All people are a part of it, and we have the organized and unorganized, the way they laid it all out. They actually have to write an amendment to allow them to do this. So every time a state starts trying to create any type of laws against your right to bear arms or even your ability to become a militia as an unorganized militia. Now, there are states that are actually making it illegal for militias to exist, organized militias to exist. That in itself is a state that has created a law that is violently in conflict with the United States Constitution. I think Minnesota might be one of those. But the problem is that nobody is challenging this. Anyway, let's just move forward. And so, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So, in other words, let's say you've committed a crime and they take your property away from you. There's no justification here that says that if you're found guilty, we get to keep it and we don't have to pay you. This property seizure of government has been perverted and put upside down, where they're taking your homes, they're taking your boats, they're taking all of your property, and they're putting it up for their own use, or they're selling it so that they can make money off of it without compensating you. They cannot take anything from you without giving you just compensation, like the Constitution says. There's nowhere in here where it says that they can actually seize and you forfeit all of your assets to the government. Nowhere in here is that allowed. But it's happening all the time. The Sixth Amendment. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy trial and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in your favor, in his favor, because why? It could be a woman too, right? And to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. So in other words, this is where your public counsel would come in, that you have this right of public counsel. You don't have to pay for it. But the problem is that the least competent people, at least anybody that's a lawyer that's out there as a public lawyer, probably goes, "Oh, that's an insult." But obviously, there are a few good outliers out there. But 9 times out of 10, those people that become permanent public attorneys or public defendants, I should say, lawyers for public defendants are people that are seeking this public representation. Well, it's kind of like dentists in the military. And people go, "Well, what do you mean?" Well, so when you see a dentist in the military work all the way up to captain, you know, as a in the Navy, you know, which is a colonel, or, you know, a dentist in the Army or what have you, and they go all the way up to retire at these higher ranks, and you realize that a dentist, because of the demand and because of the pay that a dentist makes in their own practice, well, I mean, they can make a lot more money if they were actually out in their own practice. So why would somebody stay in the military and do a full 20 plus years and then retire and then possibly go into maybe not dentistry? Because look at what these guys do. I honestly believe that some of these guys, most of these guys that stay in as lifers in the dentistry field, really couldn't, they would not be able to cut it. They would probably, because They are insensitive to their patients. They treat them like, I can tell you, having had plenty of long-term dentist work in my mouth, and you can't do anything about it. When you're in the military, there's no defense. You can't say, I'm not going to see you again. If he's the only dentist on base, you have to go see him because you have to have your regular checkups to be deployable. And it's just like, there's a reason why dentists would stay in for a long period of time. And so nine times out of 10, it has everything to do with their competency and the quality of work that they do. So anyway, and as a matter of fact, I've had dentists that have, you know, looked at the work that I've had done, and most of them go, wow, I can't believe, you know, that they did that, this shoddy of work. But, you know, they go, oh, it's government works. What can you expect? And I've had to have all of my fillings and all of the work done, redone, which I didn't enjoy either. But I did come up to an understanding, and I told my dentist, if I feel pain, you'll feel pain. And so they were far more respecting of my space and what they were doing in my mouth. But I could not have ever said that to a military dentist. Anyway, the seventh amendment, and this is where common law comes in. Now, people go, well, where is common law mentioned in the Constitution? It's right here, folks. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved. And no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any other court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. So you have these protections under common law. And every state in the union has called and has established common law as the law of the state, except for Louisiana. Now, because of this, because a U.S. citizen under the 14th Amendment now has these protections, that means that the citizens of Louisiana have these protections, which means that Louisiana can no longer practice civil law. They have to practice common law. And I'm here to tell you that because people do not understand this, this is why there are plenty of people in Louisiana that go in front of a judge without a jury, and it's like a hung court. I mean, they go straight to jail because the judge is already predisposed for whatever reason, whether that be biases or what have you. This is why we as a people from England recognize the dangers of civil law, and this is why the framers said, we've got to maintain common law. That was why when they talked about the Constitution in Virginia, George Mason and others said, why are we not establishing common law? And the argument was, well, if we did, then, you know, it would be moot. In other words, we couldn't, you know, states couldn't have their own control. So in essence, with the original draft and design of the Constitution, states were to have their own determination if they wanted to go down this path of civil law. And many of the people said, no, 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 no. And so because some of the protections that come under common law are invaluable, and as we see here, they've inserted in the Seventh Amendment common law and these protections upon U.S. citizens, which then made it moot. Every state, or actually the federal government, had to recognize common law, but at that point in time with the Bill of Rights, the state still had the choice of determining. But when the 14th Amendment passed, then all U.S. citizens were then protected from the state as well. And so please explain to me why Louisiana is still getting away with using civil law. The Eighth Amendment. And this is something that I believe is something that really needs to be addressed. And so we've got another segment. So we have a break and we got one more segment. And I'm going to ponder on this. When we start looking at excessive bail and the requirement to fines imposed and so forth, I think we really need to have a dialogue on this because our current system is inept and inadequate. But We will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the Eighth Amendment's a short one. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Now, maybe the last part, cruel and unusual punishments inflicted, maybe that's not really a real problem. But the first part sure is, because not everybody is equal. And if you have a set fee, if you have a set fine, if you have a set bail that is set, you know, if you have drunk driving and the bail is set at $100,000, well, that is excessive to a person that only makes $30,000 a year. And so it's not excessive to the rock stars, these professional ball players who go out and get drunk, and then they write a check, and actually they don't even go to jail. We do not have an equal justice system. We have a system that favors the elitists that have a lot of money, and we have a system that is very oppressive to those who are struggling. I'm not in favor of, you know, being light on drunk drivers, but we need to look at, you know, if you've got people in your community that make millions of dollars a year and you have a fine for them if they get drunk and drive $100,000, that's nothing to them. And it is not an equitable system. In other words, the bail is not excessive to them at all, but it sure is excessive. We have to wipe away set standards and actually start making and looking at every case where if a person, if they've been laid off, they don't have a job or what have you, and maybe they made a mistake and, you know, drowned themselves in their sorrows and got caught. And, you know, now they've got a double whammy, and they're going to have to stay in jail. And their family suffers double, you know, from the fact that the person is no longer able to, you know, provide for them. Their father can't work, and now he's trapped in jail. And the family actually has to suffer. We have to do something better. We actually have to look at a just system that actually has something that is comparable. And I know that people don't want people to be able to drink and drive and then not have any bail, but it cannot be excessive because the Constitution says that it can't be. And what is excessive? If it's more than you can make in a year, and if if the penalty for drunk driving is you lose your license for a year, then okay, then it shouldn't be a full year salary. As far as I'm concerned, we need to really look at what is the fair process for these different fines and fees. And I believe that if a person makes more money, then they should have to pay the higher fee. They have to pay the higher bail. They have to pay the higher fine. And it should be based on a percentage of the value and or the income that that person is making. Excuse me. The 11th article, or the 9th amendment, and this is actually a good one. This is one that really is, well, let me just read it. The enumeration, so in other words, the powers, the enumeration in the Constitution, the powers in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage any others retained by the people, or actually others retained by the people. So in other words, if they have a right or they have a power to do something, it cannot be construed that that power that the government has can take away your rights that you have or you should be retaining, your right of property, your right of life, your right of expression, and those types of things. So they can't all of a sudden come along and say, you know, hey, you can't do this here. You know, they're trying to create a thoroughfare, and that highway is coming through because this has been a you know, what do they call that? Eminent domain. And they want to expand or place a freeway and they want to, you know, take that from you. They cannot do that without just compensation. And 9 times out of 10, what they have done in the past, and they've been caught at this, and actually Bob Schultz, if I remember correctly, Bob Schultz was involved in an eminent domain case where, you know, he actually won because the state of New York was trying to get away with paying pennies on the dollar of the value of what the land that they were taking. And he said, you can't do that. You have to give just compensation of what the actual value of that land is. Anyway, the 10th Amendment, the powers not delegated to the states by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states. Now, so where is that? Where are the powers delegated to the United States by the Constitution? It's in Article 1, Section 8. Where are the prohibiting powers or the limitations placed on the states in the Constitution? Article 1, Section 10. So when they say the powers not delegated, so the powers that do not exist in Article 1, Section 8, or anywhere in the Constitution for that matter, nor power, nor prohibited by it to the states. In other words, if it's not within Article 1, Section 10, these powers are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Now, does this mean that the power to audit the Constitution and the states' compact is something that they can't do? It's unconstitutional. No. And as a matter of fact, because it is not a delegated power to the federal government to be able to audit themselves and to force themselves into compliance with the Constitution, nor are the states prohibited from being able to do this in Article 1, Section 10, this is a power that is reserved to the states respectively. Do you understand now? If it's not listed in the Constitution that the federal government can do it, like education, nor is it in the Article 1, Section 10, limiting the states, that the states cannot educate their own people, then education is a power that is left and reserved to the states and the people. And as a matter of fact, if you look at it even further, if the state in its own constitution has not been delegated that power of education, then the education is left to the people. So, folks, this is what you have to do. And this is the important part of the 10th Amendment. You need to go through your Constitution and you need to find how it was changed in granting education, health care, and all of these other evil things that they're using to destroy you by taxation, by the welfare state, the entitlement state, whatever you want to call it. And so you have to find out, are these things that your state is doing legitimate, that you, the people, had amended the Constitution and delegated that power to them? Or is this a power that was mandated by the federal government that they exercise? Because if it is a mandate of an unconstitutional power, then I'm here to tell you that this concept of education as it was construed by this mandate of federal government is not a constitutional power that your state can even inflict upon you. See, this is why understanding the Constitution and how constitutional government and unconstitutional government can really start, start spreading across the landscape. It's kind of like a disease that just keeps growing and growing and growing because the federal government keeps on usurping more and more power and then mandating to the states that you've got to follow us. Because they got the states a long, long time ago to start following mandates. And the states have been, let's say, none the wiser ever since. You, the people, have been bamboozled into believing all of this is legitimate government. And you're paying taxes to a state government that a lot of it is illegitimate. I can guarantee you there's not one state in the union that has actually amended their own constitution to grant your state to actually exercise the environmental protections and follow the federal government in these unconstitutional mandates and these regulations by bureaucracy. We have to start holding government accountable. We have to start stepping in, auditing at every level, and forcing full compliance to the Constitution. And at the state level, both the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. And we need to get the state back in line with those few delegated powers, period. That's it. Anyway, so that wraps up the Bill of Rights. And now we get to head into the amendments beyond that. And the next amendment is the 11th Amendment. Now, what I want to do is I want to give you the background on this because you have to understand that this amendment was proposed in 1794 and ratified in 1798. And this amendment actually identified a problem with Article 3 of the Constitution regarding jurisdiction of the federal courts. And so since I don't have enough time, we've literally got about 10 seconds, what I want you to do is I would ask that over the evening or what have you, go pull in, go look at your state constitution, go look at the amendment process and find every amendment that has been granted by the people to your constitution. I'll bet you're going to start finding some really glaring disparities of powers that they're exercising that was never granted. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.